Storyline with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
So much to get into on this Wednesday edition of the Lombardi Line. The show, as always, presented by DraftKings. In addition to all of our NFL talk on the docket, an insane finish in the NBA playoffs last night, engineered by one of the league's great stars. Knicks up six at home with less than 30 seconds to go. Series over, right? Wrong. Tyrese Maxey was money, which means we have another day, Michael Lombardi, that we get to talk about your 76ers still being alive. What's going on, buddy?
You know, it was a game where Bill Berman and I, the great Bill Berman, and I sat on the couch with Millie. Millie was reminding me about all the things that I was saying, that, you know, I was being too harsh on Embiid. I was, you know, all that stuff. We're constantly reminding me. And with 28 seconds, I think she finally recognized that maybe I was right. And then Maxey, from somewhere, somehow, remarkable, gets 7 points in the last 26 seconds with the 4-point play and then the 3-pointer to tie the game because Josh Hart missed that free throw and we live for another day. It was really a great game, and credit Maxey for being 17 for 30 from the field, playing 52 minutes. Mm. 52 minutes he played, you know, and was still able to shoot well at the end of the game. He finishes 7 for 12 from the 3-point line. You know, he was only plus 3 for the game, but it was remarkable. And for me, I loved it. And why did I love it, Stormy? Because Maxey has always been the player that I love. He's hardworking. He's dedicated. He's about the team. He's everything I love in a player. He's self-made, you know, drafted in the 20s, you know, where they all say, unless you're a top 3 pick, you can't play in the NBA. This kid's really somebody you can gravitate to.
46 points on the night, new playoff career high, the most by a 76ers player to avoid elimination in franchise history, and tied Michael Jordan for the most points by a visiting player in the Garden for a playoff game. He also scored or assisted on 15 of the 76ers' 25 points in clutch time. And you mentioned what he did to close out things in regulation to force overtime. He was asked post-game about what was going through his mind on that logo three.
Going through my mind right there was just find a way to survive. Like I said, our season's on the line. I mean, like, you know, I trust my work. I trust what I've done all my life, and, you know, just try to get to a spot and raise up and knock a shot down.
How does it feel to get this one?
Mandatory. Like, we had to. Our season on the line. And, you know, we fought for 53 minutes, never gave up. Even when we were down late, guys still went out there and made plays, and it was big time.
That's what you want to hear, right, Michael, from a player like, yeah, one of your leaders after you avoid elimination. How does that feel? He says mandatory.
Well, I think he is everything you want as your team leader, right? He plays when he's hurt. He gets to the rim. I mean, I keep asking this question, and we'll talk about it later in the show, is to me, Elliot wasn't really a lot, was able to watch the great
Allen Iverson.
Allen Iverson, yeah, I had a brain moment there for a second. But, you know, I did. I watched Iverson, and I loved Iverson. But Iverson was a volume shooter, right? Iverson, there'd be games where Iverson was 9 for 30 from the floor, where this kid may not have that one great quick step that Iverson had, but he's a much better shooter, has much further range, and can get to the rim. Once he starts getting some calls, you know, he doesn't get very many calls when he goes to the rim. He's really remarkable, and credit him for saving their season. Now, it goes into the category of, you know, they were able to win this because Hart missed that free throw. I mean, Hart, if he makes the free throw, the game's over, and he only made one of two, and they lived, and that was allowed them to propel them to the next game. But in fairness, too, for Philly was 13 for 19 from the line, too. Yeah. I think that's an example of how tired both teams were.
Sure, especially your boy Joel Embiid, who has a triple-double, but it's a quiet triple-double because of all the things that we talk about on this show all the time, Michael. But as far as the game as a whole goes, 16 lead changes, 6 ties in this one. It was back and forth all the way through. 76ers obviously win 112-106 as an underdog in this one. Now as the series goes back to Philadelphia, are the fans going to come out? Are we going to have more Knicks fans than Phil? Like, did they got called out by one of their stars a couple days ago? Is this going to be a turn of events here when they go back home?
Well, I think Philly fans are smart. I do. I think they understand that this is do or die, and they'll come out and support the team. Dr. J sent out a tweet last night about, you know, showing your face, coming out there, being team, and I think they will, but that's not going to stop the Knicks fans. It's, you know, it's not a far – I mean, first of all, let's understand, a lot of Knicks fans live in North Jersey. Jersey is kind of a border state in the sense that half of the state is all New York, the other half is all Philadelphia. So there's that intrinsic – rivalry that goes on, and it's hard to keep, you know, the fans from New York, from North Jersey or Central Jersey from coming in and buying tickets at a cheaper rate than it would have cost them to go into New York and buy the tickets at the Garden, park your car, all those things. It becomes rather expensive. So look, it really comes down to, they've just proved that you can win in the Garden, regardless of how many fans are at the Wells Fargo Center, you can win there too. It comes down to playing well. Now, to me, you know, Embiid was very quiet. He had 9 turnovers in the game, and I don't know where the missing 2 went, because I counted 11 late in the game, and they didn't give them to him. I don't know who they gave them to, but that was the problem. And Maxey covered up. You got to give this kid credit, man. He put this team on his back and said, here we go. And, you know, 52 minutes is pretty impressive. I mean, Embiid played 48. Tobias Harris played 49. I mean, look, Anobi played 50, and Hart played 53 too.
Yeah. And now all the pressure on the Knicks as this series goes back to Philadelphia. The 76ers laying 3.5 with an opportunity to tie this series up at 3 apiece, total 200.5. The Bucks also avoided elimination last night with a 23-point win, 115-92 the final, despite being a 5.5-point dog and being without their two leading scorers in Damian Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo. Milwaukee, the first team in NBA history to win a playoff game without its top two scorers from the regular season. Teams were 0-13 in that situation previously. We'll talk about that game as well as the two games that are coming up tonight in the NBA a little bit later. But where I want to get to here, Michael, as we turn the page to the NFL, is you have an article out right now at VSiN.com called basically your draft notes from the 2024 draft this past weekend. But it's not what we normally see on, you know, all these other websites of your draft grades and A plus B, but that's not what we're doing here. Can you explain to people a little bit about the purpose of your article this week?
Well, we call this the off season for a reason, and it's not just the draft. It's the combination of what has occurred for all these teams in the off season. And that goes for, right, there's 3 areas you want to look at every team, and regardless of sport, it's players, coaches, and scheme. And at the end of every season, and you go into your off season, you have to correctly identify the areas of weakness. We talked about this last year, the Cleveland Browns. You know, they needed to fix their defense. They hired Jim Schwartz, basically maneuvered some pieces around. They played much better defense. He was instrumental. The Houston Texans hired D'Amico Ryans. They hired Slowick to be the offensive coordinator. It really changed their whole franchise organization, along with C.J. Stroud and Tank Dell and some of the players that they brought in. So it's the combination of these events. The draft alone gets all the attention. And what I try to point out in my column was that you have to look at the whole entire offseason before you can really judge a draft. And you got to look at the teams that I thought have done a good job, whether it's hired the right coach, whether it's fixed their one position that was of critical need, and then judge those teams. Because what do we have to do as handicappers? Because we're all handicappers. You are, I am, everybody is. You have to give a power rating to the team coming off the off season, not just give grades for that. And the only way that you can actually get the right power rating is to understand what they did in all 3 areas, coaches, players, and scheme. And that's what I try to do in this column and point out some of the teams that I think have done a really good job of identifying their needs and fulfilling all of their needs in those 3 areas.
Yeah, you can't just be a winner in free agency or a winner on paper in the draft. It's about marrying the multiple seasons together into one. I know we talked a lot about the Pittsburgh Steelers over the last 2 days. You really liked what they did, but what other teams did you lay out in the article that you really want to highlight here as doing a good job?
Well, I thought the Rams, and you know, the Rams they're back in the draft again. They come back. This is the first time they've had a first round pick in a long time. But let's go back to what they did in the free agency period, right? So the Rams decided that they really feel like they have to protect Matthew Stafford. They've got to be an inside zone team, And so what they decided to do was to upgrade their guard position. They put a lot of money in Jonah Jackson from Detroit. They re-signed Kevin Dotson. They said, look, we got to protect the middle of the field. And they moved their second-round draft pick, Avella, to center, which is what he plays, and they fixed that. Great. Okay, and then they've added some other pieces along the way, and then they turned their attention to the defensive board, right? We know Bobby Brown was really good for him last year. We know Kobe Turner was really good for him. Now they add two more pieces, okay? They add Fisk, the defensive tackle, who I think is an outstanding player. They add Versi from Florida State, both players from Florida State. Then they add Tyler Davis, a fifth rounder. So they really upgraded their defensive line. So they worked offensive line, defensive line. They didn't get carried away with, oh, we need another skill player. We need another this. And those moves with the team that they have, they're no longer on the border of having, are we going to stay healthy enough? They are now improved in the area where they can attack San Francisco and run the inside zone, run the outside zone, because they've got a bigger presence inside. So I like those. I like what they've done in all three areas. Now they lose Raheem Morris. They replace him with Chris Shula. They'll run the same scheme because Shula was there last year. That could be a little bit of a problem, but I think overall I like what the Rams did. I think they really made – they've closed the gap a little bit. This West, Stormy, I hate to give you this bad news, but I think this West is going to be really a good West. The other team I thought did well is Seattle. Nobody's going to give Seattle an A for their draft. Nobody will, because Seattle's lost a lot of players. But when we come back from the break, we can talk about it. I think Seattle is in really good shape moving forward.
And with the Rams specifically, though, like, that's a team that exceeded expectations in a big way last year to punch their ticket to the postseason. So doing a lot of good things this offseason to further that into 2024. We're going to hit the break. More Lombardi Line upon us when we come back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
VSiN.com is your one-stop shop for all things betting. You want daily plays or series bets for the NBA and NHL postseason? Well, we've got you covered. Best bets and in-season futures opportunities in Major League Baseball. Done with the draft in the rear view now. We're not giving you draft winners and losers, but individual team and division breakdowns examining how the draft may impact market shifts and teams or players getting bet. Our own Michael Lombardi has a column up now at vsin.com analyzing the 2024 NFL draft, which NFL teams are actually worth a look in the futures market, because football teams on paper never play as well as football teams on grass. Head to vsin.com right now.
I love it. I always wanted to be a weatherman, you know, because you could be right. But now I have my own way of being. I got a storm warning coming because I love this segment every week. And I know I have to go away on Thursday. Tomorrow I have to go to my niece's college graduation. And then I'm off usually on Friday. So I'll miss that. So I'm glad we put it in the rundown today, because I love to hear what you think and what your mind's going through, because it's fascinating. And there's too much of me here. There should be a little bit of more of storm warning. So let's start this thing off. You believe, and I want to hear your reasons, why the Vikings are the best landing spot for a rookie quarterback, even though you went against your instincts and bet J.J. McCarthy to be a top five pick.
Yes. So, I mean, some people are going to say Caleb Williams would be the best landing spot with the Bears. And I agree, for a top overall pick, it's probably the best situation for a number one overall pick ever. But of these six quarterbacks, I think the guy with the best situation ended up being J.J. McCarthy because of what the Vikings are and what they have. And yes, I was a hater on J.J. McCarthy during the pre-draft process, but it wasn't because I don't like him and I don't think he has potential. It's because I don't think he's a top five pick, which ultimately he didn't end up being anyway. So I feel a lot better about it. But first and foremost, zero pressure to have to be the guy right away. The Minnesota Vikings go out, sign Sam Darnold for the 1 year, $10 million deal. So you can give him the opportunity to sit back, learn. How often do we talk about more quarterbacks in the NFL are ruined than they are developed? So an opportunity to develop with Kevin O'Connell, with McCown there in that quarterback room. You talk so much about the coachability factor that he has, and he's going to have a great surrounding cast to do that. Daniel Jeremiah even made a great comment. They have the three P's: play caller, protection, playmakers. Check, check, check. You look at some of the weapons they have: Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson when healthy. You sign Aaron Jones, Ty Chandler. And because of his youth and relatively low usage in college, I think that the opportunity for him to sit and learn and grow. And you listen to some of the comments from him coming out of the draft as well about how excited he is just to pick the brains of the people around him, to mold him into whatever they want to be. And again, not have to have that pressure of playing right away. I love the Vikings for any quarterback, but especially for J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think, you know, Kevin O'Connell will do a good job. Josh McCown played in the league. You know, so there is a – and the thing, too, and I think you hit this well, there's no real expectation on him being the man right away. Like, he's not coming in with the expectation. Eventually, he's going to have that. But, you know, they have Darnold there, and I'm sure when Darnold throws the first interception. But I think your point is well taken. All right, let's shift
to Michael,
a different aspect of what
– just one more thing to follow up on that. Like, the other thing that we talk about so much, too, is how they used to be in Kirk Cousins' jail. Now they have the freedom to pay Justin Jefferson, to pay other guys around this rookie contract that he's going to have. And when you think about the Vikings as a whole, 2 years ago, they were winning all of those one-score games. Last year, it's like an overcorrection where they were losing all of the one-score games. 8 of their 10 losses were by 7 points or fewer. 5 of those losses by 4 points or fewer. So they're probably better than we thought they were a year ago as well. So the team's better. He's in a good situation. I just really like the landing spot. But okay, go forward.
All right, so you know you've listened to me to ad nauseum about the Falcons and Super Bowl winning GM Terry Fontenot and Kaiser Sose McKay, but you have a different take on the Michael Penix pick, and I'd love to hear it.
I did try to play devil's advocate a little bit with you yesterday, and I regret it because I mean there were a lot of reasons not to like what the Falcons did here. But the thing I still can't get over most as a fan, Michael, is that I wanted to see Michael Penix Jr. play in 2024, and the Falcons robbed us of that. For him being one of the most, if not the most, ready to play now prospects, he's in a position now where he's probably the only quarterback of these six that, barring injury, isn't going to have the opportunity to start. Had he not had the injury history that he had, he easily could have been QB 2 or 3 in this draft class. He's the Heisman runner-up, led the FBS in passing yards, 2nd in pass yards a year ago, led the FBS in completions of explosive plays 20-plus yards downfield, had 500 more yards than any other player outside the numbers, and a stretch of 21 straight wins prior to losing in the national championship. He's a guy that I think is probably one of the most ready to play now guys that isn't going to get to. And because he turns 24 next week, if things go as they hope in Atlanta, he's going to be 28 years old when Kirk Cousins reaches the end of this contract. By contrast, Patrick Mahomes was 28 for this year's Super Bowl, his third. Deshaun Watson is 28. Baker Mayfield is 28. Josh Allen's 27. Lamar Jackson, Kyler Murray, Tua, Justin Herbert, 26. Jalen Hurts are 25. How many football lives does it feel like those guys have lived? And we're not even going to see Michael Penix at that point. And if you want to give me the Packers comp again, okay, well, Jordan Love is only a year older than this guy. He was drafted at 21 years old. They're different things, and it sucks for Michael Penix. It sucks for Kirk Cousins. It sucks for Atlanta Falcons fans and fans in general who love football and want to see Michael Penix on the field.
I love it. Preach, preach. I agree with you on all those factors. That's even the other side of it is, you know, you're going to, again, this is like, you know, you may be too young to ever see the movie Ferris Bueller, but his buddy Cameron's father's car stayed in the garage the whole time, you know, and they never could take it out. Then one day they did take it out and then had too many miles on it and they got in trouble. But you can't play to. You're right. And I agree with you. And this is another point. It does cheat us. All right, let's go to your favorite subject, the San Francisco 49ers. I think I started this rumor because when I was on Pat McAfee, I said I wouldn't be surprised if they try to trade Debo more than Ayuk because Ayuk is an outside receiver and they have too many. Give us your handle on what you would do if you were the GM of the 49ers when it came to Debo Samuel.
I think all of the rumors around the trades as it pertained to the draft made a ton of sense. But because nothing materialized by night two, I am fully convinced that it's not going to happen. It's like Mean Girls when Regina George tells Gretchen Wiener, stop trying to make fetch happen. It's not going to happen. This is not going to happen. The 49ers are going to go into 2024 with both Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel on the roster. Even Adam Schefter said on the Pat McAfee show this week as well that the plan right now is to move forward with both of these guys. They got calls on Debo. Nothing was getting close to done, though. And I understand that forks in the road are coming, that you know, Ayuk is at the end of the road with his deal, that Deebo Samuel's in year two of a big extension that comes with a cap hit. We have big contracts in Nick Bosa and Fred Warner, and Brock Purdy is going to get be paid soon. I know that's coming, but this is a franchise that is in full win now mode. They are doing everything humanly possible to lift a Lombardi trophy over their heads come next February. And that's going to involve a stacked wide receiver room. Plus, I think they did a good enough job in the draft to try to, you know, have some young talent develop behind them when the time comes. But this year, those two are going to be in the wide receiver room to me.
And a good thing, right? And I agree with that. I think the 49ers are being patient, right? They can't get the value back for what those players can do for their team this year. And they're going to go and try to get back to the Super Bowl. Your point's really well taken. All right, let's skip. I live in a little beach town called Ocean City. We have a lot of arcades up on the boardwalk. Kids go up there. They play all sorts of games. It's fun. We do not have a Dave & Buster's, but I thought this was interesting. Dave & Buster's announced that customers can place friendly wages on some of their arcade games. But you have a storm warning for those people entering Dave & Buster's if you're in there at the same time.
I'm ready to hustle some strangers in skee ball, Michael. Do not bet against me in skee ball. If you see Stormy at any Dave & Buster's anywhere and you're trying to load this app up and try to fade your girl, think twice. Not only am I ready to do that, I'm also ready to train my 10-year-old sister to becoming an air hockey assassin to unexpecting adults. Ooh. So just get ready. Michael, I do need more info about this, though. And I know that there's a lot of kinks that are going to be worked out. It is funny, though, Dave & Buster's just basically driving people to their app for something that is already being done there, right? Like you go to Dave & Buster's with your friends, you're betting against each other. It's a fun thing to do. But like, are there limits? Does the account need to be preloaded? Or is it like Venmo style where you connect your credit card to it, your debit card to it? The last thing that we need is some like Ippe Mitsuhara Dave & Buster's scenario where somebody's losing $500,000 on whack-a-mole or this is not what we need in the world. So I'm very curious to find out more information. Friendly wagers. What is a friendly wager and how much can we put in this app?
Good question. And I don't know the answer to that, but here's what I also want to know from you as a storm warning. What is your recommendation on the menu at Dave & Buster's? What's your go-to there? And what is your stay away from?
Like as far as, so I'm not like, I don't care about the food and stuff, but no matter what, like you have to have a beer on your hand. And I think that's part of the success for me in skee ball is the balance that the beer in the left hand gives as we're striking out here. It's whatever. Like I feel like bar food is bar food wherever you go, but the beer in the hand, skee ball, getting crazy, maybe play the Fast and Furious go-kart game. What's your favorite arcade game?
You know, I used to love I love any golf arcade game that you can play golf on it. And because I don't play golf, but I'm better at the arcade golf than I am anything else. And that's what I love to do. My favorite arcade game is chasing my grandkids around.
Very, very fair. Sienna getting after it. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
It's Kentucky Derby time. Are you ready for the greatest 2 minutes in sports? I know I am. Saddle up with DK Horse, an official DraftKings affiliate. Right now, new customers who download the DK Horse app can get a 100% deposit bonus up to $250 when they opt in with the code VSINHORSE, V-S-I-N HORSE, all one word. Just deposit $25 or more and complete the playthrough requirement. Download DK Horse now to join the Run for the Roses action only on the DK Horse app. And rumor has it, when our guy Harry Gagnon joins us later on, there we go, Michael. I didn't know you were a Adele fan. I didn't know you were an Adele fan.
I love Adele. Yeah, I do love Adele. I mean, God, who couldn't love Adele? I mean, that voice just comes from heaven. You know, you just wonder how people can sing like that. You just like Beyonce and Adele. And, you know, like I remember when Al Davis turned, I think it was either 75 or 70. You know, he would always take some of the people in the organization to Las Vegas to celebrate his birthday. And one year we went and saw Celine Dion at, I don't know where she was. I think it was at Caesar. Just to hear her voice in person is just like, whoa, it's impressive. So, yeah, no, I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, the Adele residency is one I have not gotten out to, but got to add it to the list. But rumor has it, as we put there, Harry Gagnon has some Kentucky Derby plays for us a little bit later on in the show. And I know tomorrow, Mike Somich, who is our resident horse betting expert, is going to stop by as well and give us some of those plays. But I want to stick with you and your writing spotlight for today, because we have that 2024 NFL Draft Notes piece up right now at VSiN.com. And earlier in segment one, we were talking about the Steelers. We talked about the Rams. And then you said nobody's going to give the Seattle Seahawks a good draft grade. But you have other feelings. Talk me through what they have done this offseason and why you think that they could be a team on the up and up.
Well, look, I'm a Pete Carroll fan, and I like Pete, and I think Pete belongs in the Hall of Fame. But I think Pete's inability to kind of fix their defense last year was a huge concern. And part of the problem was they never really could transition from his style of defense, which is an eight-man front, into what they needed to do. And I think adding Mike McDonald is a really good add. And so from a scheme standpoint, I think they're going to be much improved defensively. Then they add Ryan Grubb, the college offensive coordinator there at the University of Washington, as the offensive coordinator. I think that's going to be a lot of help for them, too, because I do think when you break down this team, they have excellent skill players, right? They have Smith and Jigba as a slot receiver, Taylor Lockett, who they redid his contract. Now you add the fact that Charles Cross is going to enter his third season as the starting left tackle. Abraham Lucas is going to be the starting right tackle. Both those players missed a lot of games last year. And then they drafted some offensive linemen. The Haynes kid from UConn's a very good player. I expect him to start. And so this offensive line will be better. And then last year, Walker, Kenneth Walker, who you've done a lot of watch Michigan State games, and Charbonnet from UCLA, those two guys are really good running backs. And they weren't healthy all year. I think to me, when you look at this team, they have good players offensively. Now let's go defensively, right? They get Murphy, one of the best defensive players in the draft. You know, they're last year, McDonald, under the guidance of his leadership in Baltimore, was able to get 9.5 sacks from Clowney off the street and 9 sacks from Van Noy off the street in August and September, and they were able to pressure the passer. This secondary is very good. I mean, Weatherspoon's going to be a good player. Woolen's already a good player. Michael Jackson has talent. You know, they can cover, and I think they'll play the right scheme. So this is a team that no one's going to talk about, but I like their team. I like what John Snyder has done. I like the coaching hires. I like the new innovative scheme, and I like the players that they've added. They've lost a lot of players, but I think they can overcome all these losses with what they've done. So to me, I think Seattle's had a good offseason and a good draft.
So with that in mind, as far as the division sits, the 49ers are a -195 favorite, followed by the Rams at +330, Seattle at 7-1, the Cardinals the longest shot at 13-1. Seattle's win total is also sitting at 7.5. If you had to pick, let's just say, and it's obviously so early, so much still to come before we see anybody on the football field, but if you had to like one of those bets more than the other, would you trust Seattle to get 8+ wins, or would you have interest on a long shot flyer at them 7-1 to overcome the 49ers in the division?
Well, I would, as you say, I would put a little pizza money on Seattle to win the division, because let's look at this, right? Seattle last year won 9 games, right? Defensively, they could never stop the run. They were 29th in terms of teams running the football against them attempts. They were 30th in touchdowns allowed. They were 31st in yards allowed. And they played a stadium where it should be really hard to run the ball. With that crowd noise in Seattle, for them not to stop the run is as much to do with scheme, coaching, as it is talent. Because even a bad team, when they play in a dome, can stop the run. It's so loud. Now, I know it's not a dome, but you've been there, Stormy. It's loud, loud, loud. And then when you look at their defensively, they just weren't good defensively at all. They were 25th overall in the league in terms of yards allowed, 30th in points. And I think that's going to improve greatly. And they won 9 games by saying all this with a ton of injuries. So I have a lot more hope for them. I think Geno Smith, whether he's the starter, you know I like Sam Howell. But I think they won't turn the ball over. They can run the ball this year because they have two really good backs. When Walker's healthy, I think he's one of the best backs, you know, in the NFC. I really do. So this is a lot to like about the team because nobody counts them. And I like Pete, but I think there's some things where they got injured and they just couldn't stop anybody on defense. They went that month of, I think it was what, from November 19th all the way through until the 49er game in December 10th. They just couldn't stop anybody. They're giving up way too many points. Remember the Cowboy game? Look, they went up and down the field on the Cowboys, right? I mean, that was a game on Thursday night. I mean, that's a 41-35 game, and it wasn't decided until late.
Well, let's stick in the West, but in the AFC, because another team that you wrote about in the article was the Los Angeles Chargers. And you talk about combining not only the coaching staff, but then the offseason and free agency and then the draft altogether. We already know how much you love Jim Harbaugh, and the addition that he's going to bring and just stylistically what he's going to do and the physicality and the run game and all of those things. But what else did you like about the Chargers offseason to this point, especially considering they did lose some significant talent because of cap issues?
Well, yeah, they did. But I think what I like the most about them is their ability to toughen up the team, right? Last year, you know, when you break down Brendan Staley was in charge of the defense, even though he's the head coach, 24th in points allowed, 28th in yards allowed. They couldn't really stop anybody in the passing game. They couldn't rush the passer. They struggled in terms of run defense in the red zone, gave up 26 touchdowns, 26th in the league. Harbaugh is going to bring an element of complete toughness to the team. They are going to be tough. And I think we as executives and handicappers, we tend to overlook the impact of a head coach can have on the team. We so focus on what players here, what players there. When the team is unified and comes together, they're going to run the ball. They're going to be fundamentally sound. And as you talked about with Minnesota, they're going to be able to win some close games because of this. And they're going to make Herbert, which is really the key here. Forget all the everything else around Herbert's window dressing. If they make Herbert a better player, which is what I believe they're going to do, which is what I've seen Jim do before in his past, if they make him a better player and he starts 17 games and he's able to throw the ball and do the things he's capable of doing, it makes them a much better team already.
Win total for the Chargers coming up this year, 8.5 to make the playoffs, -115 in the division, sitting 3-1. And Michael, a lot of the article was based around teams that you do feel have improved themselves. So I'm curious on the flip side of that, like, are there any teams that you feel like, I mean, perhaps have gotten worse throughout this or have just stayed status quo and aren't teams that you're interested in looking at?
Well, I think the Cowboys, hit some really good key elements of their draft. But when you're counting on the draft, and this is the essence of my column, is we get so caught up in the draft, we get so excited about the draft that most of the time these draft picks don't play a lot. And so they're really for next year's draft. And where the Cowboys, they need this draft to really play for them. They need the Guyton kid to start at tackle. They need the BB kid to start at guard or center. They need these things to happen for them to be a good team because they've had no offseason. Did you see the video on Twitter about this kid imitating Zeke? Did you see
him? No,
I mean, this guy's got to be like, oh, it's hilarious. I'll send it to you. But, you know, they signed Zeke back, and I think Zeke's better than people think. He played decently, but they still don't have a runner that you could say, okay, who's replacing Tony Pollard? Remember, 2 years ago, Tony Pollard averaged 10 yards per catch in their passing game. That's a huge element they missed last year. Is that Deuce Vaughn? I don't know. I think, to me, the Cowboys, are they as good as they think they are on defense? I thought they overachieved last year. I didn't think they underachieved. So with a very, very soft offseason, I'm worried about them. And then I'm worried about the Brownies. Brownies were active in free agency. They knew they didn't have draft picks. But my question about the Browns comes down to who's going to play quarterback? Same thing with the Raiders. Who's playing quarterback? Who can lead them to 10 wins in Cleveland? Who can lead the Raiders to 10 wins in Las Vegas?
I'm very curious with the Browns if we've reached the point where Deshaun Watson just is what we see. He's not going to get back to the guy that we thought he was. And that's a scary thought if you're Cleveland, given what you've invested in him. The win total for the Browns, 8.5. Dallas, by the way, win total back up to 10.5. Michael, we're going to hit the break when we come back. Continuing our division deep dives, looking at the AFC South today and Michael's evaluations of the pieces that each of these teams picked up. We'll be right back.
Yeah. This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
No better time than right now to further your sports betting knowledge than with a VSiN Pro subscription. Your ticket to insider insights, exclusive data, and winning strategies. For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price. Normally $240, you can now grab your subscription for just $199. Sign up today, and we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That's 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day. But you have to use our promo code Lombardi. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with the leaderboard to see who has the best win percentage and ROI. 19 hours of live programming daily, including expert breakdowns and in-game analysis, proven betting systems from professional handicappers, and our exclusive betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for each and every game. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199. But again, you need to use that promo code Lombardi, VSiN.com/subscribe, promo code Lombardi. This is the Lombardi Line alongside Michael Lombardi, Stormy Bonantoni with you as we continue to recap this past weekend's NFL draft through the lens of divisions. So our division deep dives continue. Today we are on the AFC South, Michael, and let's start at the bottom of the South with the Tennessee Titans. Titans brass following the theory of QB year one, tackle year two. They believe in Will Levis. They got him Calvin Ridley in the offseason, and then they use their number 7 overall pick to protect him in J.C. Latham. And coming off of a season, Michael, where the Titans allowed 64 sacks, second most in franchise history, 47 of which were attributed to the offensive tackle position, that was a priority.
Yeah, no question. And it was a little bit of a shocker, I got to be honest. You called it, I didn't. You were right. It was a shocker for me because I thought they would go, I kept hearing they're going to go wide receiver because Brian Callahan comes from the Cincinnati Zach Taylor school of thinking, which is build your team outside in. Draft Jamar Chase over Penei Sewell. Both players are really good. It comes down to team building and valuing the position. And I think with his dad, Bill Callahan, I thought maybe he would take advantage of Bill's ability to coach, feeling like he could get some of these younger players to play better, and therefore they would take the receiver, Odunze, and leave Latham on the board. But they didn't. They took Latham, who they needed badly. I mean, they needed a left tackle, you know, because, look, if you're going to put all your eggs into the Will Levis basket, which is clearly what they're doing, you got to protect. And they couldn't throw the ball effectively. They couldn't get enough plays together on a consistent basis to really to make their team have a chance to win. And they've had plenty of chances to win some of those games down the stretch. They had a lot of injuries on defense. The pick that surprised me was the Sweat pick from the defensive tackle from Texas. Look, the guy is very talented. But when you draft a guy who's had a DUI in April of the draft, you're telling your team something that you probably don't want to say, right? Like, and maybe he'll be cleared from the charges. I don't know. I'm told he won't. I'm told that this could be an ongoing problem for him. We'll see. Hopefully it's not. You're rooting for the young man. But to me, they've already lived this with Tarrant, who they cut midway through the year last year when he had a weight problem, which Sweat does too. And he had some off-the-field issues, which Sweat obviously does too. So to me, when you look at everything, have they improved their line? Yeah, they have. You know, is Pollard going to be healthy to be the running back? We shall see, right? There's a lot of question marks. But ultimately, the biggest one about this draft isn't about Latham or Sweat or Brownlee or Jackson, all these guys they draft. It really comes back to, is Will Levis good enough?
And that's a question that we don't know the answer to just yet. But clearly, they're showing that they want to invest in the young man. Will Levis is their guy, and they're moving forward with him. And like you said about Tavondre Sweat, obviously they lose a couple of important pieces up front on defense last year in Azeez Al-Shaair and Denico Autry, their lead tackler and sack getter. So they needed somebody to add in the draft. It's just an interesting pick for sure with Tavondre Sweat and the off-field issues that he had. But he was a unanimous first team All-American, Outland Trophy winner for best interior lineman, and Big 12 defensive player of the year. So the talent is there. Titans are 10-1, the longest shot in the AFC South to make the playoffs. It's plus 425, yes, minus 650 for them not to be a postseason team, and the win total sitting at 6.5. Let's go now to our guy Elliot Bowman's Indianapolis Colts, getting set for year two with Anthony Richardson. Only got a glimpse of him prior to a season-ending injury, but it was an exciting glimpse if you're a Colts fan. They give him offensive support with a wide receiver and tackle in the first three rounds, but with their first pick at number 15 overall, had their choice of any of those stud defenders and made Leatu Latu the first defensive player off the board.
They got a great outside rusher, a physical player, somebody who could power rush, somebody who could run. I think this was really needed. I mean, last year, when you look at their team and you break them down, they were 28th in points allowed. They were 24th in yards allowed. You're going to move the ball. And what hurts them is when you build a defense on creating turnovers, where the Pete Carroll scheme is all about the ball, right? That's all Pete would say. It's the ball, the ball, the ball. Well, they were 16th in creating turnovers last year. And a lot of that was the fact that they couldn't really control the front. And they were another team that plays in a dome that couldn't stop the run. I mean, teams could walk in Indianapolis and run the football. They averaged, you know, they were good in terms of yards per attempt against them, but they were horrible in terms of yards. People wanted to run the ball, and that makes it really hard. But again, I think they had a really good draft. I love the tackle from Pitt. They got the receiver, Mitchell, from Texas, who wasn't a burner. Everybody thought he might go in the first round. Ballard talked about, you know, his off-the-field habits, which people were questioning, and I agree with him. Look, if you're going to question a player, say your name to it, right? Mm-hmm. Don't hide behind something else. And again, you got to believe the upgrade from Richardson from Minshew has got to be a huge, huge win for them. And the Colts, they decided this offseason, all they wanted to do was sign their own players back. They added McMillan inside to give them some defensive tackle help, which they need based on their run defense. And they got all their other players back. So corner is the only position they did not address. And everybody wants to talk about it. But the reality of the corner situation is, in this scheme, it's more important to get the rusher than it is the corner.
With Mitchell there, too, the wide receiver from Texas in round two, you mentioned him being a first-round talent and grade for a lot of teams. ESPN's draft day predictor had it a 0.4% chance for him to be available at number 52, so perhaps coming in with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder this season. The Colts plus 340 in the AFC South, win total 8.5. Let's go to Jacksonville. Things went really sideways for this team after an 8-3 start. They ended up winning just one game the rest of the way. Trevor Lawrence dealt with an assortment of injuries. They grab a couple of LSU guys in the first two rounds, and Brian Thomas and Mason Smith. How does this group alter your perception of Jacksonville, if at all?
Well, they cut Zay Jones immediately after, which tells you Brian Thomas is going to take replace of Zay Jones somewhere. I mean, the biggest issue in Jacksonville, they signed guys in free agency. None of the free agents seemed – I mean, Zay Jones was a free agent signing for him, right? I mean, they can't seem to kind of get the production with what they pay for out of what they sign. And I thought they would go defensive back. I thought they would go corner because last year they struggled to stop the forward pass. They were 25th in yards allowed. Now, they hired Ryan Nielsen to be the new defensive coordinator. Maybe that'll help. But there are corner shorts. Campbell's a really good player. They don't have another one. They're going to count on Ronald Darby to be the corner. I'm not sure that's going to work out. We'll see. So I thought they could have gone there. Like, I don't know what the preoccupation was to add another receiver. I know they lost Ridley. They signed Duvernay. They signed Gabe Davis from Buffalo. So they've got, you know, they brought guys in. Like, I thought, to me, which would have been a better, you know, they could have taken Mitchell the corner. They traded away from him. We shall see. Balke loves size speed guys. The reason why he drafted Walker over Hutchinson was because of size speed. Thomas is that, although he's an inconsistent performer. And I think it's going to take him some time. This is probably wrapped around the criticism that I have on Trevor Lawrence, which is simply this. He's not throwing the ball down the field enough. I mean, he averages in his career 7 yards per attempt. That's Daniel Jones-like. That's not good enough. You got to be able to get to 8-0 to make the playoffs. And maybe they feel like they needed more speed on the outside, but I don't know how many more resources they can put into their skill. Ingram's a free agent, a franchise player, right? You know, ATN, they picked up their fifth year. Right. You got, you know, you sign Gabe Davis, you sign Christian Kirk to a rich contract. Like, if he's not making plays now, when is he?
Jacksonville opened win total 9.5, now 8.5. Last year, they were an odds on favorite to win the division. Now second shortest shot, plus 240. The Houston Texans are the team all of a sudden everybody's chasing here. Plus 110 favorite to win the division. Absolutely nailed the draft a year ago with CJ Stroud and Will Anderson, who end up being the offensive and defensive rookie of the year this past season. Because of that move, no first round pick this year. What was your reaction to their 2024 class?
Well, I think the 24 class for them is going to be, can they help a little bit, right? Mm. Because they did all their damage in free agency. They went out and, you know, they've got Daniel Hunter. They've added to their defensive front. I mean, they've done a lot of good things with their team. I think ultimately it's all going to come down to that, the moves they made, the development that they had. But when you look at them, you know, they get it another corner, which I think they needed to do, and they added another offensive lineman, which they needed to do. You know, and I think both those will play right away, and this team's ready to go. I mean, they've added receivers. You know, they've got Stephon Diggs. They've got Tank Dell, if he's healthy from the gunshot wound. You know, they got Noah Brown. They've got good players on this team, right? And so I think, to me, this is going to come down to staying everybody the course, and their leader, C.J. Stroud, seems determined to make everybody be humble and gain more confidence and try to just keep going further and further.
He's the fourth shortest shot to win the MVP at 9-1 for a reason. We'll be right back resetting with hour two of the Lombardi Line.